This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com coming to you on the 16th of June, 2011. And today I'm honored to be joined by Pepe Escobar, a journalist who writes an influential column for the Asia Times Online and appears as an analyst on The Real News Network and Sibel Edmonds' Boiling Frogs Post podcast and other independent media outlets. Pepe Escobar, it is a pleasure to have you on the program today. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, Mr. Escobar, you've been covering the recent Arab uprisings in some detail for the Asia Times Online. Please give us your take on NATO's adventure in Libya so far and the supposed justification for this conflict, the so-called responsibility to protect.
Wow. If this was a horror movie or a gory movie, it would be something absolutely outstanding. The problem is this is reality. It's even worse than a movie. It's international law going up in flames, in fact. You have NATO as a weaponized arm of the UN. We have a resolution that was basically the product of a deal between the Brits, the French, and the Americans, and the House of Saud, because there wasn't a direct exchange. Look, we won't do anything about the Persian Gulf. You, the House of Saud, are the top dog. You can do anything you want, like invading and repressing Bahrain. On the other hand, we need an Arab League vote so we can do what we want with Libya. And that's exactly what happened. So the so-called Arab League endorsement was not an Arab League endorsement. Only 9 countries out of 22 of the Arab League actually voted. 6 of them, Gulf Cooperation Council, which is basically the Gulf Counter-Revolutionary Club, in fact. And 3 others, including Jordan, which is a monarchy, very much closely aligned with the GCC. So with this Arab League endorsement, they could go back to the UN, and the British and the French were redacting the UN what became UN Resolution 1973, could then sell it to the rest of the Security Council and get a resolution and start actually bombing Libya. The problem is, the BRIC countries, the top 4 BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, they abstained. Germany as well. And we were in close contact with ambassadors at the UN of the BRIC countries and also with the Germans. And they told us directly, look, we could not possibly endorse this because it's an open-ended resolution. It's very dangerous. It could open a precedent that could be applied to anybody. And the Chinese saw that this could be applied to themselves concerning what happens in Xinjiang and in Tibet. So now what we have is NATO now as the de facto weaponized arm of blowing Tripoli to pieces. This is what they're doing, saying this is not a war. Responsibility to protect who? They are not protecting the civilians in Tripoli for that matter. We have this bunch of dodgy exiles came back from Washington and now are part of the Transitional Council in Benghazi. We have opportunist military defectors from Tripoli. We have al-Qaeda-related jihadis like of the al-Libi kind who are part of the council as well. The council doesn't even name their members because some of these characters are so unsavory to Western interests and to Western public opinion, aware Western public opinion. So now, the end game, what is the end game? Okay, we get rid of Gaddafi and we get the Transitional Council in place. No, it's not going to be like that because the West, especially Washington, London, and Paris, they're going to pick carefully the members of the next Libyan government because it's all about Libyan resources, especially oil and gas, minerals, the fact that the central bank cannot be totally independent like the Libya central bank is. What are they going to do with the $70+ billion of the Libyan Investment Authority, the 13th largest in the world? Most of this, these assets were frozen by the Europeans. And it's a neo-colonial war that's being sold with the lamest of excuses. And obviously, nobody in the world buys apart from Washington, London, Paris, Rome, and that's it. And Qatar, of course, because Qatar now is a very intimate liaison, part of the GCC as well, contributing with fighter jets, helping the so-called rebels to sell their oil. This is the direct connection between the GCC and getting rid of Libya, which for the GCC and especially for the House of Saud. There was a very, very bad blood between Gaddafi and the King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia since the build-up towards the war in Iraq in 2002. So now it's the perfect opportunity for all of them, the GCC countries, especially House of Saud. The Americas want basically a better participation, if not outright control of the oil industry in Libya. The French were not very happy with the small participation they already have. Most of Libya's exports were oil exports were going to Italy until now, 35% of them. And obviously, this is another way to marginalize Russia and China. Don't forget that 3 days before Resolution 1973 was approved, Gaddafi gave an interview to German TV that was obviously not reported in the West at all, apart from Germany, of course. He said, look, if I'm attacked, I'm going to reschedule all my energy contracts towards Russian, Chinese, and Indian companies, and the West will be totally out of it. So 3 days later, we know what happened, the start of the bombing. And in a bigger picture, the bigger strategic, geostrategic picture, it will be an enormous victory for AFRICOM, the Pentagon's African command, and NATO, for two basic reasons. It's the first AFRICOM war in Africa itself. AFRICOM is based in Stuttgart in Germany because nobody in the African Union wanted an AFRICOM headquarters in their country. And NATO wants the Mediterranean as a NATO lake, and Libya is out of the picture because Gaddafi was not one of our bastards. He was too independent-minded, and he had silly ideas like developing projects in sub-Saharan Africa, for instance, which in terms of the international financial community doesn't pass any muster. So it's a total neocolonial war. That's the five-word Hollywood-style definition, if you want to sell the movies. Okay, let's launch a new colonial war against a dictator in Northern Africa. So this is what we got.
Well, that's an extremely interesting analysis, and you raise a number of important points, including the idea that there's very important international precedents being set here, not only the humanitarian bombing intervention to other aspects of this, the attempted assassination of Gaddafi and the collateral murder of his son and grandchildren as a result, the recent International Criminal Court request for an arrest warrant for Gaddafi for his alleged war crimes, and the prosecutor did not even bother to step foot in Libya to actually take a look at those claims before asking for that. It would appear there are a number of worrying precedents being set here. How do you frame the importance of this Libyan operation for future NATO missions, and do you think this is a portent of things to come?
Yes, it is, because now NATO is going global. NATO is involved in a war in Central Asia. If you consider Afghanistan, in fact, is the crossroads between Central Asia and South Asia. So NATO is already implanted in this key crossroads since Silk Road times, in fact. NATO now is on a war in the Northern Africa. So South Americans, I've been talking to diplomats from Brazil and Argentina this past few months. They say, look, sooner or later, NATO is going to find a way to intervene in Bolivia or in Peru. And this is not as far-fetched as it seems. Let's wait a few years. So NATO now is the global Robocop Terminator of the westernized Atlanticist elites. It's basically, of course, we all know that NATO is the Pentagon arm in Europe, and with the connivance of right-wing, extremely conservative governments in Europe, like in France, in Italy, and in Britain at the moment. No wonder Angela Merkel, which is also conservative, she knows that the motives behind all this are very, very murky. And Germany considered Germany's strategic interest in all that, and they refrained from endorsing it, and they are still not by any means supporting what's going to happen in Libya. So it's a portent of things to come. So I wonder how selective is going to be, because this will not be applied against, for instance, Uzbekistan. It will not be applied against Myanmar. Myanmar is very close with China. Uzbekistan is part of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the SCO, also part of a mechanism that includes China and Russia. But it could happen in Syria, for instance. And now we can see the first steps of, okay, let's get rid of Assad, because we need to protect Israel. We need to exclude the Russians from the Mediterranean, because the Russians have a naval base in Syria. So NATO, sooner or later, is going to extend its presence in the Middle East as well, or in this arc that goes from Northern Africa to the Middle East. So it's a giant counter-revolutionary process under the edges of NATO in Brussels.
Well, then finally, bringing it back to Libya, there has been intense speculation in recent weeks about an escalation in the conflict, including the possibility of U.S. and or NATO ground troops being deployed in the near future. Your comments on that idea?
Well, we all know that they said from the beginning, in fact, the resolution is explicit, no boots on the ground. For that, they would need, theoretically, a new resolution, which China and Russia already said on the record that they will veto. So I'm sure they're going to find some kind of scheme, a real mafia-style scheme, obviously, to have boots on the ground. In fact, some of these boots are already on the ground. CIA operatives, British SAS, French intelligence operatives, people who are training the so-called rebels. And of course, they NATO in Brussels basically thinks, okay, if we bomb the hell out of Gaddafi's compound in Tripoli, sooner or later, he's going to disappear or we're going to smash all his infrastructure. He won't be able to conduct his military anymore. But they haven't done that for the past 2.5-3 months. So this could go on for another 6 months. And the longer it goes, Gaddafi could, in fact, do what Saddam Hussein couldn't do at the time in 2003. He could resist for a long, long time. And even if he's deposed, he could conduct a guerrilla war. Because don't forget that large swathes of the Libyan population are pro-Gaddafi as well. So this is not a question of a 90% of the population against a dictator. Things are much more complex in Libya. But obviously, you don't get this story if you follow Western mainstream media.
You certainly don't, and that's why we will have to continue to try to find other sources of information like your excellent articles with the Asia Times Online. So I'm looking forward to that, and I certainly do appreciate your time. I know you're a busy man, but I certainly hope we can do this again because I really do value your opinion. So Pepe Escobar, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.